Hi, this is Ernie Fazio, and the show is Earnestly Speaking. I'm talking to Steve DePass. We've been talking about the present political situation with Donald Trump, what it means to the electorate, what it means to the country. And Steve has had some experience in politics, but he's basically a performer and a songwriter. So, Steve, where were we when we left off? We was like... politicians are not exactly forthcoming. And when they speak, they know exactly what they're going to say. They know exactly the pitfalls of the conversation. And they know, and if they're clever enough, they avoid the pitfalls of the conversation. They really get Sarah Paulinized, you know? Where, you know, you're such a novice at this that you screw up, and it's appalling.
Like pivoting away from the subject, and they start. You can ask a direct question, as you well know, but you do not get a direct answer. They speak and they answer every question that was never asked.
Exactly, and it's a little bit frustrating, but I'm not bad at bringing them back to the, to the bucket and, eat out of here, because this is the bucket you came in to eat out of.
That's called holding their feet to the fire.
Well, that was a better term, but I couldn't think of it at the moment. So I made it up. You see, that's what I do. I make it up, but my point is, when are we going to be the sophisticated electorate that says, answer this question, and don't stop. You know, every time you ask a question and you get palaver, you just say, answer the question I asked. And when you do that, and you see it done from time to time, it makes the interrogator look like he's being abusive. And that's intentional, because they set themselves up to be the victim in a case like that. I don't care.
This happens over and over again. Yes, but even when hard-pressed by an interrogator, an interviewer, who would say, that's very interesting, but that's not the question that I asked. I'm looking for a direct answer to this question.
And then do it all over again.
Never will answer the question.
Yeah, and that's what you have to do. Now, when I was on the air back in 88 and 90 and all that, I wasn't as knowledgeable about the world as I am today. I was a little bit younger. And, all of this was pretty new to me. That was when I was first on the radio years ago. So I give myself a little slack on that one. But I don't really get enamored or off-tracked too much by them today. And there's a fellow out here running for a position on the East End, and he wanted to be on the show. And I says, you know what? If you get on this show, I'm going to give you what for. You're going to have to answer questions, and I don't care if I embarrass you. You want to still be on the show? And he says, yes. And I asked the questions, and it was hard questions, and he answered them. And he did a pretty good job. At the end of the show, you know what he said to me? He said, thank you very much. This is the best interview I've had. So
right.
Sometimes you make people better just because of what you do.
Well, you earn their respect. It's like two gladiators, boxers, who give it their all, and at the end of the contest, they each respect the other. And you see them embrace and congratulate each other because they've earned each other's respect. And I think that...
You think that phenomenon was at place?
People.
Yeah. And yeah.
Tell that story about what you said to Clinton that time and how he left, so...
Well, I'll leave out the poor language, but
you mean the expletive?
The expletive. He had been making a speech at the LIA, and he was talking about the Marshall Plan and what a wonderful foreign policy endeavor that was, and it cost $50 billion back in 1945. When $50 billion was not like $50 billion today. It would be more like $800 billion. It was almost a trillion.
Or more like trillions.
Maybe. In any case, he recognized that we were winning the war, and he called in Dean Acheson I'll tell you what, Clinton had told how what a wonderful thing it was, and blah, blah, blah. And I, so at the rope line, when I got an opportunity to shake his hand, I says, you know why they called it the Marshall Plan? And he says, yeah, it was named after George Marshall. I says, that's true. I says, but there's more to the story than that. And he leaned in a little bit, and I says, when President Truman realized that he was going to win the war, we were going to win the war, he called in Dean Acheson, who was Secretary of State, and he called in General Marshall into his office, and he says, gentlemen, we're going to win this war, and when we're done, we're going to have a situation that's not too dissimilar than it was the war, the First World War, and we're going to have a mess. We're going to have a situation that will be ripe for another Hitler or Mussolini, and we don't want that to happen. We have to have a plan. And I want you guys to devise the plan. So Clinton's listening to what I'm saying. So when he comes back, when Acheson and Marshall came back, they said to him, here's the plan. And they go through it chapter and verse, and Truman's listening. And he says, well, there you are, sir. That's the Truman Plan. He says, yeah, really? The Truman Plan? He says, you want this to go anywhere, you better call it something other than the Truman Plan. Do you know what my approval rating is? About 16%. He says, so you better call it either the Acheson-Marshall Plan or the Marshall-Acheson Plan or whatever you want to call it, but you're not calling it the Truman Plan, not if you want it to survive. So Acheson looked at the president, and he says, well, George did most of the work. He says, why don't we call it the Marshall Plan? And that's why they called it the Marshall Plan. And Clinton looks at me and he says, is that true? I said, I don't know. I make crap up. And, he laughed.
You're not making it up, but it was a funny punchline. But it's just as well, because politicians do make up a lot of things and pass it along, such as what was called legitimate rape and things like that.
So anyway, I said to Clinton, I said, actually, I got that from David McCullough's book on Truman. And, I'm sure he looked it up, because the next time he made that speech, I'm sure it was different.
Right.
So anyway.
Getting back to Trump. Now, we both agree that he is a phenomenon. Where is this going? Will people actually catch on?
Well, there's a couple of things. There's a lot of dynamics here, and I want to talk about that, too. We can do another two segments on this if we run out of time. But there's a whole lot more to this, because there's dynamics happening on the Democratic side, too, not as a result of this, but in concert with it. And
yes.
I'll talk about that, too.
But, talking about Hillary?
Oh, yeah. Hillary's got problems. And,
yes, she does.
And
she does. And do you think it's because of her adversaries stirring the waters, or because she actually made these egregious errors?
I think it's a combination of making some dumbass errors. And, of course, the dogs with the bone, I ain't giving it up. You know, they're gonna gnaw on this bone until the cows come home, and so they're having a party, and she's having a problem. So it's a combination of things. What has happened, though, is that even though Hillary is having a problem, Trump has weakened the coterie of candidates on the Republican side so bad that whether Trump wins and actually gets the nomination, or he loses and it goes to one of these losers, I mean real losers, not the loser of the campaign, it's going to be a problem for the Republican Party. And I'm not lamenting that, because what we need less in this country is another Supreme Court justice appointment under a Republican president. We need a little bit more balance in the court, and it's imperative that they don't have that control. And you know, the electorate doesn't generally understand the enormous power that they give the one side or the other when they let things fall out of balance. I think for many years we were balanced in the court. We had
the Warren Court.
Yeah, we had a balance of conservative ideas and liberal ideas that fought each other tooth and nail, and for the betterment of the people. And because once we work things out in a very well negotiated way, you tend to get the result that is best suits the situation. When you don't have that balance, you lose that ability to get a situation that is fair. Citizens United under the Warren Court wouldn't even have been acceptable as a case. This is Ernie Fazio. I'm talking to Steve DePass. We're talking about the present politics and with the Trump phenomena and what's happening. And we're going to be back. We're going to be doing another two segments on this. You have time, right, Steve?
Yes. Do you realize? Well, we're not on the air now, right?
No, we are on the air. We got to close.
Oh, okay. We'll close off and I'll tell you.
Okay, this is Ernie Fazio. This is Earnestly Speaking, LI News Radio.